Thanks very much for sticking around. When we first started the session, I told Daryl here that I thought there'd be just three or four people here, and I was going to buy everybody drinks for sticking around, but the number of people here has exceeded my budget. But thank you for being here.
I'm leaving if I don't get a drink.
Rain check for next year in Dallas. Okay, so I'm going to try and keep this interesting and light, since we are the last talk today. So we have a lot of people that have participated in this project over time and funding from a number of sources, because we're using a number of different irrigation scheduling methods that have been developed with different sources of funding. So our goals here were to look at three specific irrigation scheduling tools that the University of Georgia has developed over time. The first one is a soil moisture-based sensor system that my research team has developed. The second one is a smart irrigation CotNap. Some of you have heard me talk about this in other years. And the third is the extension checkbook method. This is the third year that I've been doing this trial, and I was hoping that to use the data from this year to sort of wrap everything up and say, okay, we've got some decent tools for scheduling in Georgia, and these are the recommendations of how you use them. But we had some surprises in store for us this year. So rather than give you a wrap up, what I want to do is focus on the surprises and the gaps in knowledge that these surprises have generated. And you can see some other things that were part of the study today. I'm going to talk about the yields and the water use efficiency resulting from the study, but I'm not going to talk about the field to market footprint calculated data, which are part of the study that Cotton Incorporated has asked us to collect. So just to give you a quick summary of the methods for irrigation scheduling, this is a summary slide for the UGA SSA. Bill, who just spoke, gave a paper yesterday describing it and how we're using it to do dynamic variable rate irrigation with it. But essentially, it's a tensiometric method. It has three watermarks that we've incorporated into a package that we can use to schedule irrigation, transmits the data wirelessly. It's pretty effective for collecting a lot of data in a lot of places. This has been sort of commercialized by a company. Each node costs, for research purposes, about $600. So if you're interested in this, that's what it costs to put a sensor with the electronics package in one location. One of the advantages it offers is that the antenna is very flexible, so you can drive right over it. You don't have to remove it for installation. You can see here, basically, it's got a spring-loaded antenna. The second scheduling method is a smartphone app that we've developed in conjunction with colleagues at the University of Florida. And this app has been released for 2 years now. It has some adoption in Georgia. There are about 500 fields irrigated with it in 2015. This is a checkbook ET balance approach, but actually uses a crop coefficient and environmental conditions to estimate crop water use. And the third, of course, is the check method, which has what I call sort of luxuriant recommendations for water use, doesn't take into account environmental conditions. So it just recommends how much water the cotton needs every week during the growing season. So these are the three methods we're comparing. There was a fourth method that we were supposed to be comparing, which I'll talk about in just a moment. The work was done at the Stripling Irrigation Research Park. You can see an aerial view of the park here. This is something the University of Georgia maintains. It's probably one of the premier irrigation research sites in the southeast, and one of the best in the country as well. The work we did, some of Dr. Snyder's work is done over here. We did some of our work back here in this corner. Here's an overview of the plots. So the plot area we used is right here. This area has 27 plots. The plots are 50 feet wide. They're separated by 60-foot alleyways. Half the plots are conventional tillage, and half are conservation tillage. They're irrigated with a VRI-enabled lateral. So we have 9 irrigation zones. So as the lateral moves in this direction, here's the lateral. As it moves in this direction, we can control the amount of water applied in this direction on each one of these 9 plots. This is the randomized block design for the experiment. The solid plots represent conventional tillage, sorry, conservation tillage. And the crosshatched plots represent conventional TIDs, so you can see they're all randomized as well. So what we had here was we are applying these irrigation methods. Well, sorry. It's the hazard of using the mouse to point. What we have here is each of the treatments that we wanted to apply, they're applied to a conservation tillage plot and a conventional tillage plot. And this reduces the number of replicates we have, unfortunately. We're thinking about changing this for coming years just because we need more replicates for our statistical analyses. So we have the COTNAP as treatment number one. The UGA SSA, which is the smart sensor array, the tensiometric method, was supposed to be treatments three and four. Treatments five and six was supposed to be Irrigator Pro, which is a USDA ARS scheduling tool that has now been formatted to take data directly from our wireless soil moisture sensing systems. But there was a snafu in the web development of that, and so that wasn't available. So that became just a second UGA SSA treatment. And we set the threshold for triggering irrigation at a weighted mean of 50 kilopascals, and then the checkbook method. So inside the plots, there are eight rows of cotton. And this year, our superintendent at the park, Calvin Perry, decided that he wanted to put four varieties per plot. So we had two rows of each variety in each plot. I'm not going to talk about the variety data today because there's not enough time, but it'll be in the paper. And inside each plot, because we have the UGA SSA available in large numbers, we were able to install a node in each one of these plots. So even though we were not scheduling with it in each plot, we were able to track soil moisture conditions in each one of those plots. So here's going straight to the results and some of the surprises. And I felt a lot better about our results after today, actually after this conference, because I saw presentation after presentation where people said the rain-fed data, the rain-fed yields were better than their irrigation scheduling treatments. So in this study, with irrigation, we managed to suppress yields. The rain-fed data, I think your grad students saw the same thing, John, at the same location. So as you can see here in this bar graph, the blue bars represent yields of the different treatments. The rain-fed conservation treatment, we didn't have a conventional for the rain-fed. We only do rain-fed on the conservation treatment. Had a lint yield of 1,760 pounds per acre. And then all the other irrigation treatments were below that, slightly or significantly. Actually, not significantly, because there are statistically significant differences here, and I'll explain why that is in the next couple of slides. The line graph here indicates how much irrigation we added to each of the treatments during the growing season. So that's not the total amount of water it received, but just the irrigation supplement. So the checkbook method, as you can see, received the most water, 6.5 inches, in addition to the rainfall, which was about 23 inches. The UGA SSA, with the 50 kilopascal triggering threshold, had the next highest yield. It's not too different from the checkbook, the rain-fed method. But everything else, you know, was quite a bit lower. So I started thinking about why this is happening. And here is the precipitation pattern for the year. So the blue bars that are coming down show the rain events over the growing season. And then that trapezoidal shape is sort of a theoretical crop coefficient curve for the growing season. So you can see that we receive rainfall during the critical part of the growing season. I mean, that's the key here, right? But the question is, why did our additional irrigation suppress yield? That's the big question here. Why did we end up with less yield? Because as you'll see here in a couple of slides, we actually had pretty dry soil profiles for much of the growing season. It's not like we had a wet soil profile in the rain-fed plots. So here's a summary of the data for the treatments that received, all the plots received exactly the same amount of water. And I want to highlight the variability that we have between plots. So, you know, everything was the same. Each one of these treatments and plots received the same amount of water, but look at the variability in yields between from one plot to the other. And here on the right-hand side, you actually see the true difference in yield and the percent difference from the lowest yielding plot in that treatment. So So this is something that's really difficult to explain what's going on. And I've spent some time trying to figure it out. So here are the UGA SSA graphs showing soil water tension for each of some of the plots there. So each one of these graphs shows you date along the bottom, soil water tension in kilopascals along the top. It's color-coded here so you can, for ease of reference, the blue region goes from 0 to 50, the yellow region 50 to 100, and then 100 to 200 in the red region. And each one of these lines is a depth, so 8, 16, and 24 inches. So this is the rain-fed plot that had the highest yield of the whole study. You can see it's a pretty dry plot, right? We got a lot of rain, but the soil moisture was not really luxuriant in there. And yet this produced pretty good yields, almost 4 bales per acre. This is the second highest yielding plot. This is the SSA in conventional tillage. So here we were triggering irrigation when the weighted mean of the three soil moisture sensors was at 50 kilopascals. And this is wetter than the one above here. Now these are the two lowest yielding treatments, and you see the difference between them is that they're a lot wetter in soil profile. So a wetter profile this year resulted in lower yields. I wanted to show this slide to give you a sense of the variability in soil moisture between three plots of the same treatment. So this is the rain-fed treatment, the three plots of the rain-fed treatment. You can see that there are pretty dramatic differences in soil moisture condition between the three. And part of that may be an explanation of just subsurface hydrology at the site. So the three plots are this one, and this one. And once I started looking at the data analytically for each of these plots, generally up here on this end of the study, we were going from a moist condition to a wetter condition. So the plots here on the very end all seem to be wetter than the plots here and so on. So there was a gradient going from bottom to top in terms of more moist conditions. On the surface, everything was nice and flat. We didn't really have slopes that are obvious. So there's some subsurface hydrology going on here that's affecting our data. So moving on to water use efficiency. Here we did have some statistically significant differences. Of course, the rain-fed plots, because they did not receive any supplemental irrigation, had the highest water use efficiency. The units are in pounds per acre per inch. So we're at 76 for the rain-fed plots, and then everything else is somewhere below that. The UGA SSA conservation tillage plots had the next highest water use efficiency at 68.4. In this graph, the line shows the total amount of water applied to each of these treatments. So you can see how that varies. So water use efficiency was moderate to good in some of the plots, and I would say poor in some of the others. So the conclusions from this study is that irrigation may suppress yields in wet years. And I think what this means for us is some of my colleagues are not sure about how we should schedule for wet years. I mean, we're irrigating and it's not benefiting us. So it's costing us money, it's costing us water resources. And I was very, very concerned about this when we started seeing the data from our plots. And then I started speaking to some of the growers in the region, and they had observed the same things. So most of our large growers are 50% irrigated, 50% rain-fed on their cotton plots, and they were observing the same thing, that their rain-fed fields had outperformed their irrigated fields, and they too were stumped why in this particular year this had happened. We've had wet years as part of this experiment before, and we have generally done pretty well. Our soil moisture sensors over the past have actually been pretty good ways to schedule irrigation. So we have not really outperformed rain-fed plots in wetter years, but we've not ever seen the suppression in yield. We have this high variability in plots, which is a little bit difficult to explain at that particular site. So we're going to do some more investigating using some of the methods others have described by using GPR. We've done VARIS there. The VARIS data don't show us much difference. And the other thing is that soil moisture placement may be very critical here. We are measuring one point in the plots. And I have a vegetable physiologist at our campus who I'm working with now on another project, and he has data showing that when you put a soil moisture sensor next to a plant that's pretty vigorous, and in the next foot you have the same soil moisture sensor next to a plant that's less vigorous, that plant is dramatically affecting the response of the sensor. So I'm wondering if this is what's going on here. We have one sensor in each plot. You know, one plant, one root system could be affecting the response. And some of the John's work here with canopy sensors with a large field of view may really be the answer long term, where we're looking at bigger sampling areas for our scheduling work. So I have about 30 seconds.
About
maybe.
30 seconds, but it's the last presentation.
Oh, yeah, so we can be here for another hour. That's right. More beers for everybody. So I'll be glad to take any questions you might have.
George, have you gone and actually looked at the soils information for the site? Some of your variability, you know, not knowing what that site looks like, but there's a possibility that you've got quite varied soil texture, for example. You may have, you know, something like fairly high sand within an area and fairly high clay, which could explain why you see so much difference between the sensor site for a particular treatment. I also noticed that you've got, like, for example, I think with number 9, you had two in the same, what I would call the same rep, none in the top rep or in the first series right there. And I'm wondering if you're getting any movement of moisture through the field, for example, or runoff, for example, that may skew it towards the bottom end of the field, or that may not be the bottom end of the field.
So all these things you're saying, you know, we need to investigate more carefully. What we've done so far is there's not an obvious elevation change. So runoff will just kind of flow along rows, but we'd have those alleyways to minimize, you know, from one to the other. Some of the things Brian talked about yesterday about using GPR to see if there's subsurface layers that are causing transient water tables might be. Yeah. But we have run varus there across this, deep and shallow, and the varus data are grouped very, very tightly. I mean, you can make a map that shows differences, but you're forcing it. You know, there's not much difference in varus data. So something else is going on there.
Varus would show up.
Yeah, but if you do it after a good rain, you let it drain for a day or two after a good rain, you would expect that the moisture would actually accentuate any differences. So I really don't think it's texture, but it could. There's something going on for sure. Yes. I'm sorry. It could be. I mean, there could be a number of things going on that we really need to investigate, because you know, the kind of variability you see here between plots in the same treatment is really pretty worrisome for this particular site. Andy, you had a question?
When you say canopy symptoms, are you saying canopy temperature?
Yes, that's what I'm alluding to.
Just a question. You saw the canopy temperature response is closely linked to the soil moisture.
What I'm suggesting for using canopy temperature is not to use a canopy temperature that's very, let's say, site specific. You know, it's looking straight down at the canopy, but something that's looking broader, as we were discussing the other day during lunch. So John has a lot of good data from this site that shows that, you know, canopy temperature can be used to schedule irrigation pretty effectively there. But I'm thinking about, you know, perhaps mounting something on the lateral that can look down and see a good portion of the plot, as opposed to taking a point measurement in the plot. Yes, sir.
From my experience, always excess irrigation reduces the yield. So do you think in your irrigation plots that happens to excess irrigation?
What do you mean specifically by excess irrigation?
The excess irrigation, more irrigation reduced in your plot. I mean, not necessarily irrigation happens to your irrigation plots and rain.
Well, obviously we had the situation where we didn't need water, but the interesting thing was, for example, scheduling with the 50 kilopascal tensiometric threshold, you know, we were crossing the threshold several times during that season and triggering irrigation, and that has been a successful strategy for us in other years, and this year, for whatever reason, the timing, you know, just didn't pan out. So I think we need to wrap it up and then just talk unofficially if we need to.
Yeah, we have a business meeting in about 26 minutes.
Okay.
So
I'm not sure he wants to stand there.
I don't want to stand here for 26 minutes either.
Yeah.
Great, thanks for your interest in staying through the last presentation.